Bannister, I am speaking about school reminiscences from 1941 to 1949. My name is Gary Bannister, and I want to preface...
You sit down, you'd be closer to the mic.
No, I don't want to sit down. Have you ever seen an elementary teacher that sat down to teach? I can't do that. And I wanted to tell you I was an elementary teacher because that's going to color a little bit about what I have to say about my experiences at Holden, my school experiences, and a little bit about the community life. I really enjoy this experience of coming back. You notice when you're first on the boat, and you first come up to Holden, and you see all these weird people on the boat, and they dress funny, and they look kind of funny, and a few of them are pretty rude, and you think, gee, I'm going to have to be with these people for a certain length of time. And then during the week, a great transformation takes place. And by the end of the week or the time that you're here, they're your closest friends, and you don't know how you ever lived without them. And one of the opening pieces that you use at a dinner table is, have you been at Holden before? And that's always fun with me because I'll say, well, yes, I've been here two times before. I was here a couple years ago, and then I lived here for 8 years. And they go, oh. And all of a sudden, you're an antique. You feel what it's like to be venerated a little bit, like there was some special touch, or there wasn't such a person as you who could live in a place like this. I have a few things that I'd like to share as far as maybe grabbers. We're a beautiful setting, and so Hollywood took advantage of us a couple of times. We met people like W.C. Fields and Lassie. In fact, there was a time when the school was let out, and we went up to Railroad Creek. They had a tame bear, and he was taking the fish out of the water, and they had about seven little lassies that they were, I think, trying to give them a screen test or something to determine whether they were going to fit into the movie. But my real grabber, and I was telling this to Elmer when I first came here, but it probably didn't impress him very much, that I traded comic books with Elizabeth Taylor.
I'm impressed.
I'm glad. Thank you. Now, she came here when she was about 10 years old, a freckle-faced little girl that had some show of promise at the time. But I saw her at the fountain lunch is where the little cafeteria or the lunch counter is right now. And she had this big stack of comic books. And that happened to be one of our pastimes here at Holden, was to trade comic books. I wish I had all those comic books that I had traded 40 years ago. Now, I can't honestly say that I really traded comic books with Elizabeth Taylor, but I remember seeing her there, I remember the comic books, I remember the conversation, but I thought at least it would be a good opening line. And that gets to my most important point that I want to present tonight, and that is this business perspective. That you see, all that is a perspective of something that might have happened, a part of it happened, and I'm just sharing some things with you tonight as a young child between the ages of first grade and eighth grade. I'm not a historian. I cannot give you factual accounts. I'm going to just express to you some experiences as I saw them as a child. Just about the time that Dorothy Bennett was walking down through this valley, there was a young man back in Buffalo, New York, by the name of Bud Bannister. And he had a friend in the Army who was a sergeant. Bud happened to be working that time, but the sergeant said, "Now listen, we want to get you out of that job because there's a thing called the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCCs, that are taking unemployed boys and they're bringing them to the Northwest, and I want to go there, and you and I are good buddies, and let's go there together." So Bud quit his job and they brought him in back to Idaho, and the CCCs built many of the cabins and the bridges and the trails that you find in national parks. But while he was there, he attended a dance And at the piano was this cute little dark-haired, brown-eyed piano player. And that was my mother, Hazel. She's going to be here with us this Saturday for the first time in 33 years since she left Holden. I'm looking forward to that time just to show her the flavor of the community. They went back to Buffalo. I was born there, but it was still the middle of the Depression. So my dad got an old Model T Ford truck. And as we were coming through the Dakota area, I think somebody took a picture of us. I was looking out the window, my mother was leaning against the fender, and my dad had his foot up on the running board, similar to this. And we really looked like Arkansas travelers coming out of the Dust Bowl. We made it to Elk River, Idaho. My dad injured his back and working as a lumberjack, but he was studying electricity, and he heard about this job at the Holden Mine in the compressor room. Now, the compressor room at that time was just a place where they coordinated all the electricity that was used here at the mine. And he preceded us by a few months because my mother was awaiting the arrival of my baby sister, Gloria. And we arrived here in 1941 in October, and I started school in this two-room schoolhouse. The year of the war is, of course, still a part of the memory of Holden. I remember the bombing of Pearl Harbor and the end of the war. My dad was drafted at the time, but because this was a very vital part of the war effort, he remained here at Holden. And so, in a sense, we were very insulated from the effects of the war when it came to families. There were none of the men that left the Holden mine to go into the Second World War. I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the school year, or the year that as it affected a child. I think of it in terms of holidays. We had, as all of you know, a very small schoolhouse. By the time I graduated from the eighth grade in 1949, there were seven in our graduating class, but there were only 40 in the school. The addition that goes out as the bottom part of the T was not a part of the schoolroom when I was there, and there were a number of homes that had been added up in the campsite that hadn't been built by the time I left. Because holidays were a high point for a child, the seasons kind of fit well together as far as the holidays. For instance, we always knew we were going to have snow on Halloween. And when we went out to trick-or-treat, if the snow hadn't arrived by that time, it was there on Halloween night. It was always snowing. Christmas time was a special time for the children because the community took time to buy presents and bring Santa Claus in. We had a sing where the children presented Christmas carols in the auditorium, and the whole community came together at that time. I'm going to be talking a lot about separation and units of separation in my discussion of the education and the life of the community at Holden. And one of the separations happened to be what we called the town site and the camp site. Now, the town site included the circle of the chalet, what you call the chalet homes now, and the dormitories. Then up in the campsite, which was the place where the miners built their homes, existed a little bit different community. And at Christmas time, this was a little bit apparent to me. For instance, I could understand how Santa Claus could get down the chimneys of some of these houses down here. But there were no chimneys like that up there. And this was a little bit of a mystery to me, how Santa Claus ever got into our house. But miraculously, he made it, because all of us experienced some good Christmases here at Holden. We had the oil stove, the central heating. And you'd come, before you'd go to bed at night, we'd put a old Life magazine on top of the stove and get it heated up, and quickly take it upstairs and tuck it down underneath our bed so that we'd have nice warm feet in the cold winters that came. And I was telling the children today, when I was telling them the story at Narnia, that there wasn't too much daydreaming in the wintertime in the schoolhouse, because the snow actually came up to the eaves of the roof, and you could not see out of those windows. And if any of you have been here at wintertime, you can corroborate that. The distinction then between what we called the campsite and the town site had a little bit of an effect on us as far as our school was concerned, because there was an educated mentality and then there was the workers' mentality. And there was a separation there. Even in the baseball teams, you'd have the engineers and you'd have the diamond drillers. After a while, my dad found out that he was going to make more money as a diamond driller, which was taking the core samples out or preparing the mine for the blast, to blast the ore out, and so he became a diamond driller. Another thing that we were aware of as we grew up, although the children were all a part of a community, the educational expectations of the circle were quite a bit different from the educational expectations of campsite. And most of the children then, when they left from the circle, went to private boarding schools, or in many cases were expected to go to college. It was just a part of the educated part of the community here, and the mining laboring community of the campsite. I was impressed by how small the buildings, the actual rooms were. I had two teachers from the first through the eighth grade, Mrs. Bowie from the first through the third and fourth, and then Mrs. Florence Field from the fifth through the eighth. Those rooms were awfully small. And I spent an actual 2.5 years in those two rooms total, if you total it up the actual amount of time. My impressions of those 2.5 actual years and 8 school years was that we had the most basic of education. All of us knew how to read. My mother, who had been a substitute teacher in the Wenatchee school system for 30 years and was helping in this system as a music teacher, said she never ran across a kid in her life that she couldn't teach how to read. There was no doubt that you were going to read. Now, it might hurt on the way, but you learned to read and you learned your math tables and you learned to do the old Rice system of penmanship. And these were basics, so that by the time you were through with the eighth grade, there was no doubt about those basic skills. In fact, I was telling the kids, I showed them one of the tables down there that we use, one of the desks, and I said, you know what that little hole is right there? They said, oh yeah, that's for the ink. I said, that's right. We didn't even have fountain pens. We had to dip that in. And one of our jobs was to go out and to get the ink and come and make sure that they were filled. And those old scratchy pens, that was just a part of life. That's one of the few things that I remember as far as what we actually did there in the classroom. One Christmas, one of the boys, after he had opened his presents, said that he had received the most amazing present. He said it was a pen that you did not have to dip into the inkwell. It cost $35, and it looked like a jet rocket. It was amazing. And, of course, the ballpoint pen began to be part of our culture. We don't even think about it anymore. The next holiday, and after Christmas, the one that I remember the most was the 4th of July. That was a time of decorating the bikes, going up to the baseball fields and having a parade, the sack races and the sprints, the baseball game. We brought in quite a few baseball teams from outside of Holden, from the Army and the Air Force. A lot of good baseball that went on here. I think about Holden and those seasons and those holidays, and it seems to me that those are where most of my remembrances are. As I zero in on the week, it would be punctuated by a couple of movies that we paid 12 cents each to get into, and the barbershop where It costs 25 cents to get a haircut. We had the rec hall that was always available as far as the bowling alley was concerned, and the gymnasium. We used to put a large tarp over the gymnasium floor and then put the chairs down. And I noticed that you did desecrate that place and you took down the basket off of the basketball backboard, and I'll never forgive you for that. My daughter...
Go back up in the window.
Well, why don't you have it when there's some basketball players here? There are many memories of the season changes and what we did. I lived on skis in the wintertime. You see, it wasn't that you went away to ski somewhere. You went across the road and up a half a block, and there was a ski area where they had placed the shell of some kind of a boat, and they had a motor within that boat, and then there was a rope tow. So I would just push up a little ways up the hill, and I was right there at the ski slopes. Or you were there able to trap for rabbits, or you went down a couple blocks to fish. You were always in the hills. You were in with the water. One of my personal disappointments is to come back and not be able to go and drink the water. You see, I thought that was eternal, that you could always come to Holden and drink the water. Isn't it interesting the effect of what happens in our world system? I want to go back and talk about the two-room schoolhouse, because as I began to think what I wanted to share during these times, you'll notice that I haven't drawn very much out of that experience. And I reflected on that quite a bit at the beginning of this week. We had some unique opportunities in that every year we put on what we called an operetta. And my mother conducted the music, and Mrs. Field used to do the directing of it. So we were always in front of an audience, and we experienced those type of skills. And yet, there was a great lack in what I would call the depth of the arts. For instance, when we thought of art, the visual arts, I can't remember, for instance, an art lesson that left an impact on me. I was not aware of any artists in the Holden community that took advantage of the surrounding. The music was the Golden Songbook. Do you remember the Golden Songbook? Well, that was it. And there's a long, long trail of winding, and Old Black Joe was about the extent of it. It was very mechanical, and it was like it had come out of a curriculum book as to what was going to happen in those two rooms. And then when I came back at the beginning of the week, and I looked at those two schoolrooms again, and I realized how small they were, I came outside and I said, they missed where the schoolroom is. And Sunday evening, as I walked up the road with my wife and we looked at the sky, I thought, nobody had told me about the stars in this wonderful valley. And there was no one that took time to explain the names of the flowers. I'm embarrassed, I can't tell you of the flowers, or even the names of many of the trees. I know nothing about geology. And because part of the separation was, we were on this side of the railroad creek, and the mine was there. And the business was over there. And the activity was there. And the men who had either the ability or the background, somehow in the community, this was never transferred to those two rooms. Or they never took us out to show us what was going on in this valley. We went into the mine a couple of times. We were allowed to go up and down the mill sometimes. But there was no concept of physics, or there's no concept of chemistry or geology that could have filtered through these people into the classroom. I make that point not to criticize them, because that was out of the Depression times, and people were concerned with getting a job done and making a living. And they were in, probably some of them, for the very first time in their lives, able to have a home, to buy the home, to have three meals a day, and to have some comforts here in the valley. But they worked very hard, and my dad very seldom took me out to camp or up to the lakes to fish because he was too tired. This was hard work. You go down in those mines, and as good as Howe Sound was in taking care of their people, that was extremely difficult and back-breaking work. Many men died, not just because of any accidents there in the mine, but because they were worn out. Nigel Adams had spoken here before. His dad's name was Bull Adams. I mean, and that's what he was, too. But he was worn out from the mines. That's hard work. So the mentality of the community was such that it never blossomed out to be able to see what was here. And I mentioned to you about music, and I mentioned about art, and I like to come to dance now. We had a certain concept of what dance was. Dance was what happened on the 4th of July and New Year's Eve. And I mean, it was really dance, but not in the aesthetic sense. The rec hall down here was a real stomping place. And there were no taverns here in this vicinity. The booze was down in Lucerne. And all of a sudden, around the 4th of July and the first of the year, things got pretty active. And the dance, of course, was a time when things really began to hop and pop around here. So that was somewhat my exposure to the arts, in music and art and dance. I'd like to talk a little bit about the spiritual community. There was a Sunday school, and there was an Episcopalian priest that came in about once a month, and that was the extent of the Christian witness. Now, I've been searching my mind for some recollection of Christian witness, and I cannot remember any Christian witness here. Very few of the people that I know from this community have a relationship with Christ since the time that they left. It was as if that was another part that did not fit in, or there was no consideration. And you who have come here and have experienced this valley and the village and see it through your eyes, see an entirely different valley. And I guess part of my job is to come and to say that there's a little myth attached to the people who lived here at the time. They did not live in an idyllic situation. They were here to make a living. And to ever consider that you would come back here for a vacation is like going across the streets to the mud flats. You wouldn't do that. What does this all come down to? Well, it comes down to a childhood that is being expressed from one perspective. You understand, if you brought someone else in that same period of time, that they would look at it differently as far as their experiences. I think that being a spiritual person, as I am now, in the sense that God has touched my life, that the spiritual dimension is so much importance to me, but it never had its setting here. I never associated the Holden setting with spiritual things. The closest it came to it was a few experiences. One was when the Baptist preacher came in and scared a couple of us boys. And then when I had discussion with Seventh-day Adventists about the Antichrist Catholics, and I knew some Catholic people here in the community a little bit. That sum total, you see, isn't very substantive for a young child in their understanding who God is. But that mountain had significance to me as I was growing up. It was something that was there early in the morning because the sun would hit it, turn it many times a rosy, fiery color, is unbelievable, changes. There was somehow a presence here that something had taken place, and that there was some value and some formation and some plan. It was here, but it was never presented or formulated for the children, as all these other experiences were. Now, someone in the last session said, well, I lived out in the farm, and I never thought about the skies and all these type of things, and I went to school, and by golly, you got it here, and you learned how to read, and you learned how to write. What? How different is that? And I said, yes, I'm not blaming these people. We in education now are looking at children and education in a different way than they did 40 years ago. Well, my point is to use this setting and my experience to encourage you to use the settings that you are in to be responsible to children. That doesn't just mean here. That means wherever you are. That for you to forget to look through the eyes of those children as to what they are perceiving about their family, about their relationship with God, about their community, you need to get down there and you need to look and to see how they are looking and what they are seeing. And so I'm not presenting this as a condemnation for this community. They didn't know, maybe, that they could have taken this setting. And I feel that in many ways that the soul had been lost in this valley. A mining company had come in and had seen some copper, and they had seen a way of very humanely getting a group of people to work that copper and to get it down and get it to a place where it could be used for our society. I don't have any argument with that at all. They ran into a little problem in that Chile came up with better, cheaper copper, and so they had to cut and run, and they did. And some people got hurt. But in the process, they were humane. But the soul was not here. And there's only one way to bring the soul out of community so that it can touch the lives of a child as far as the arts are concerned, as far as the spiritual existence is concerned, and that's the spirit. And you see, there was a sovereign God who came back and reclaimed this valley. And when I came up 2 years ago, I had a vague idea there were some crazy Lutherans running around here. I didn't know exactly what the implications were, but there was all this Jesus talk, and they were really serious about this, and they had brought some life back into this valley so that the significance of all these things, whether it was the physical setting, or the music that you've brought back, or the dance, the emphasis on the art, all reflects the soul of the valley. And even the attempt to reclaim the orange blot out here, which is interesting to watch. My desire is to contribute to this community, and in a sense of maybe keeping you aware of getting down and looking where children look, and seeing that viewpoint, and keeping you aware of not buying into the world system of being on track with something that's current just to be on track and being current. And that you have a great responsibility with these children that are here, and this is a great schoolhouse to do this in. And I really feel privileged to come back here and to share these things with you, and I look forward to a number of years of doing that. That concludes what my formal talk is. I'd like to field some questions at this time.
Where did you have the ballpark? Where did you find a level on a plate to play ball?
It's right up here. past the campsite, about a half mile from here, maybe. We'll go up and show you. How's your batting? Yes.
I don't know if you know, but we were just thinking the other day, you know, when the bus comes up here now, it's a very narrow road. Certainly in those days it was two-way traffic, is mm-hmm. that right?
Yes.
Do they really fit on that road?
You had some very good drivers. You had some very astute people that worked here. One of the other things that I wanted to mention was that when I was in the eighth grade, another one of these separations, when I was in the eighth grade, a representative from the Ford company in Chelan came and talked to us. He said, "What do you guys know about automobiles?" And there were five of us boys. We didn't know anything about automobiles. And yet across the river was probably one of the most sophisticated mechanical operations that there was in the state. But you see, there was something didn't click as far as children were concerned, or what could have been opened up. But there were accidents on the road. But these were very fine-tuned Mack trucks that went up and down this road, and the snow removal equipment was very well taken care of and very advanced.
Left in a hurry. Mm-hmm. I am just wondering why things weren't packed up and taken with them.
Now, I don't know that that's true. I've heard that that's true. I can give you maybe some insight as to why that happened. Miners are transient people. You don't think of that in this community because this seems somewhat stable. But when they closed down the mine, those guys had to get out to other mines because the jobs were limited. And it was a matter of why I'm not going to be able to keep anything here, not going to be able to sell it or anything, so I have to get out. Yes?
You didn't stay here to that point, though. You were here in 1941, you were here to 1941.
Yes. In the fall of 1948, my dad, who used to cuss out the blacksmith on his way in the mine, and that's how they communicated in the morning. It was like a cup of coffee and cuss out the blacksmith, see? When he went in one day, he wasn't feeling too hot, and Joe Short said, "Hi, bud, you old so-and-so," and my dad went over and clipped him.
Oh.
So he had a choice. He'd either be fired or he was going to quit. That was in the fall of 48, and he decided to quit. And that was my last year in school here, and the family decided that I would stay and finish the eighth grade. And then I noticed in one of the newspapers up here at the portal, there was a little annotation there that Hazel Bannister said that Bud is now working over at Medellin Falls, and they'll be joining him sometime in the spring. So we were able to stay that winter, and it was a tough time. It was a tough time for my mother because it was a particularly bad winter. And then we left in the spring. Yes?
There was a train, a cotton train coming and took the stuff up and down the steep part of the road, forward. Did they have some kind of, did they go all the way down with their trucks?
Just the trucks.
All the way down?
All the way down with the trucks. Pardon me?
There was no railroad?
No railroads that I know of. I think they had considered a railroad at one time, is that right?
It got the name because they had planned to come up, and the grading that became the road was the original grading plan for a railroad.
But they never did have a railroad. Elmer, you had a question.
I've heard different numbers, and I don't know who ever has an exact number, for the number of houses or homes in the campsite.
There were about 80, I think, when I left, and I think there was a total of 100. I'm not the statistician. I'm the semi pseudo philosopher. So you've got to remember that. There was a girl that did her doctorate, and I think Dorothy was mentioning that, who actually went up and researched the the foundations, and I don't know pure statistics on that.
Where did you live, here or?
No, I lived in the campsite, and we went up and found the foundation there, and went across the street to the tree that where I had a rope. I used to go up in the tree and tie myself and just sit and meditate. I was a kid that went out in the woods quite a bit by myself, and enjoyed that. In fact, my son and I tried to find the old water boxes that in the original community they used as servicing the water to the community. They would accumulate the water in boxes that were about 10 feet long and 4 feet wide, about 3 feet tall, and then they would just siphon them off to the houses there, but we weren't able to find them a couple of years ago. Yes.
What about emergency? Did you have a doctor living in the community?
I'm glad you asked me that question. We had a token doctor that I think the company had sent here to protect him, or I think he had some kind of a problem. He did not know how to doctor. And I broke my collarbone playing football out here, right there at Chalet number 1. And I had to go down to Lucerne and down to Chelan to get my collarbone reset. So that was a kind of indication of the level of the ability that we had here. Yes?
That is people with a 12 population.
I think at one time it reached 800. There were 600 when I was here.
During the time that you were here, do you remember watching the tailings grow? Do you, when you first got here, I mean, I'm kind of curious. I mean, were they placed there specifically? Was that a place that was picked for them? Or?
That's something that, as a kid, it's kind of like reality. You never stopped and said, well, why are they doing this? It was like it was there. We were not aware too much about what was going on over there because we were with our friends. It's like where you live, I could probably come and say, are you aware of this? Say, oh, wait a minute, I'm not. See, because of the focus as a child. Probably our level of awareness of what was going on at the mine was we used to get the powder, and they had these little sacks. And we used to tie the sacks with the powder, and we used to play capture the flag. And when you hit somebody with that sack and that powder, I mean, you knew you were dead. So our experiences with the mine were kind of at that level.
Did you ever notice them growing? I mean,
I can't say that I did. But you see, what would be interesting, and I'm a person who really believes in perspective. For instance, I don't believe there are very many liars in this world. You know that? I think there are people with different perspective. Mm-hmm. And if you really dig far enough, it's really kind of hard to track down a liar. Have you ever tried to track down a lie? So perspective is a lot more important than we realize. And what you need to do sometime is to get somebody else who has been in that same experience, have them tell the story. That's what makes it neat, because they were probably sitting over here worried about that. And I was probably worried about chewing my fingernails too much. Yes?
My mom grew up in a mining village, and she always was telling me stories about how when there are accidents in the mine, that they sound off an alarm or something like that, and that everybody used to be really scared about that. Do you recall any, alarms?
No. What kind of a mine was that?
Coal.
Mm-hmm. You see, this was a very safety-conscious mine and a very responsible mine. I think that I was not aware of mining accidents except one that I'll tell you a little bit about. And more of a hazard was avalanches, snow avalanches in the wintertime. And we would lose men on their way to work, going on the switchbacks or going where they had the air ventilation, the large tunnel in the airplane propeller type of sound was always here. It was a big horn kind of thing. It was bringing fresh air into the mining system, and the men would have to walk up there, and every once in a while the avalanche would get them, because you see how steep these mountains are and there's very little warning. The one accident that I do remember happened to a friend of ours by the name of Fred Wigbers. And he was a carpenter who had an accident and that blinded his left eye. And he was in the hospital, and his wife was relieved because at least he would have his right eye. Unfortunately, Fred had never told his wife that he was blind in his right eye. So he became our commissary clerk there where the post office is now. We had a commissary there for a number of years because we didn't have a grocery store. We would send out our order to Chelan, and once a week they'd bring up our groceries, and we'd go down here to the where the store is now and pick up our groceries and take them home. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, a couple nights here, the wind come up and blew quite hard, and a lot of dust come off of the tailpipe over there. When they were mining there, did that create a lot of dust here in the town? Wouldn't it?
Not that I was aware of. That's the first time that the wind, I could even be aware of the wind, was that the other night. I'm sure there was, but it wasn't that much of a factor.
Well, when the mine was going, so then there was water in those.
Yeah, it was damp.
Pushed up, it wasn't dry.
Yeah, it was moist. Thank you, I forgot about that.
I've been told that the tailings are responsible for the fishing not being good downstream from the village. I don't know if that's true or not. If it is true, what is in the tailings?
Well, if you went through the mill process, which I'm not the expert, but it was a chemical process, and so that it was a separation process, so that you were skimming off something, and then the residue was taken out. So there were some pretty powerful chemicals that contributed to what you see out there.
There's rumors that there's arsenic in it also. There's some element of arsenic, I'm not sure.
Of what?
Arsenic.
Yes. Yes, because that's going to do the job. Yes?
Was there fire danger? I mean, were you aware of that? Was that something to do with your own fire department?
No. In fact, there were two things that I was not aware of, and I need to have somebody help me out. One was the fire aspect of it. And the other was the police aspect of it. I was never aware of a policeman here. Now, it's kind of racking my brain because somebody had asked me about that. But it was a pretty stable community. They had, I think they worked them too hard to really get in trouble. The only trouble that I knew of was when we used to go try to swipe somebody's home brew. And that was the extent of what I knew of about trouble.
Did the Forest yes. Service have something to do with it at that time? I imagine they did.
Yes, I think this property has all been leased from the Forest Service anyway. But once again, I was not aware of that. Yes?
Well, I had heard that one strong reason to behave up here was because if you didn't, well, you'd wind up in the service.
Oh, yes. I'm sure that's true at that particular time.
What was the size of the Honeymoon Heights community, and when did that get started?
We were talking about that with Dorothy, and that she answered a question that I didn't know, and I often wondered, why was Honeymoon Heights stuck clear up there on the side of the hill? And I thought, well, that's where honeymooners want to be, you know, separated. But she said, and it made sense, that at one time the road came across and up to the mine, and at that level is where they were mining. So that's where the first residents began. There were no buildings down here. So then when they began to locate it down here, then it was kind of unfeasible to have it at that point. And so that's when they started building up the valley. There wasn't anyone living at Honeymoon Heights at the time that I was here. That community had been abandoned by that time.
Any idea how many houses were up there?
No, I don't. I really don't.
There's a picture of the new
yes, I saw that. But I'm not sure about the population. Yes.
I don't suppose as a child you were aware of it, but on reflection, can you imagine what the women were doing while the men were so exhausted and worn out? Was that hard work for them to wash?
Well, it was. You had washing machines, and of course you didn't have any dryers, and the children in the community and the activities. were, I wouldn't say overwhelmingly oppressive in any way, but it was, I think what we have to remember is what a mining town mentality is. It's a, you wouldn't find expressive women in this, in that community. There were some very intelligent women here who were intelligent enough to not let the men know how intelligent they were. Mm-hmm. You had that feeling. But it was pretty closed in that sense. That was just the way it was.
Well, there was the gardening and the baking of the bread and the subsistence.
And once again, as a child, you don't stop and try to evaluate that. I try to evaluate it now because my wife lets me know that I should evaluate that.
Since you say that the only dancing you remember was the 4th of July and the first of the year, weren't there other community type activities where they did things like they usually do in a small community?
Have I talked about the gambling hall and the?
No.
What were you thinking of?
Oh, not that. Oh. I was thinking, you know, like in most small communities, that there's quite a closeness, and especially on winter evenings, they get together and do mm-hmm. things like.
A lot of card playing. There was a lot of that.
With everybody or just men?
Well, no, the women, but. There is a great pull towards this rec hall, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. Somebody asked me about how men save their money, or if they save their money, and the economics of it, and I felt people were pretty frugal here, but every once in a while there would be kind of a little shock wave going through the community because somebody had lost quite a bit of money down in this gambling hall. It was one of the few places in the state of Washington that had slot machines and open gambling. I don't know really what the rationale was for that, but this brought in some professional gamblers. And they worked in the mine, but they made their money down here in the pits. It got a little tense. And I could say, as a youngster, you feel shock waves sometimes in a community, but you don't know why. You don't know why. There was one child abuse situation that you were aware of, and it kind of rippled through. But that was a pretty potent force, and you kind of go down and you're having a good time down there. But there are some pretty sad stories that came from people that just spent their time, men that spent their time. And I know my neighbor one time tried to get my dad to go down and get Bill out of the gambling dens because she was afraid he was going to lose all his money, and of course Bill wasn't going to move. He was having too good of a time down there gambling. So there was that aspect of it. This has been kind of fun having
That's
you ask questions. What's that?
That's what I was thinking of. I was thinking like when, you know, communities would get together and have a taffy pull or different kind of community activity where the husband and wife, the whole family got together there. Not just the men going to play cards, what does the rest of the family do?
You're going to have to talk to somebody else about that because the child community was very strong. In fact, I've talked about the problems that we had in adjusting when we left Holden because we were 50 years behind as far as the social aspect of life. We would go out in the evenings, and if it was winter time, we would all be sledding or snowballing, and the mothers would come out on the porches and yell for the kids to come back home. And in the summertime, it was kick the can and hide and go seek. And it was a community of children. But I can't really tell you that the social community of the adults that much.
Right around this area, wasn't it predominantly single men anyway? Mm-hmm. In dormitories?
Yes.
So you were pretty much segregated up there, and then people living in what we call the chalets were a different class of people than your family, mm-hmm. anyway.
There was a definite separation there. Yes.
Now, you just touched on something a minute ago about being all these years behind after you left this community. Right? Just a second ago?
Socially behind.
Yeah, okay. What did you mean by that, and what things were you behind in?
Well, I guess as a boy I was aware of the sports aspect of it, that I had no formal training, so you were right in the middle of semi-pro preparation by the time you got into the ninth grade. And they took it seriously out there. We used to do this stuff for fun, play basketball and play baseball, but not when we went, when I moved to Wenatchee. This was a serious thing. You went from a class of seven children to 250, and one of my friends in ninth grade had a new Chev convertible, and you had dances where you dressed up and you asked girls out and this type of thing. And you see, that was it was like this to many of us. An adjustment that none of us made easily, because see, social life was the all the kids together, and that was one of the strong bonding parts here at Holden, where the kids were all played together. Yes.
Did you take trips out of Holden very much?
Well, once a year, and of course my particular trip was to Elk River, Idaho, which isn't really a step up from Holden when it comes to big time, and you might waft through Spokane. So the lumberjack community and the mining community was a pretty closed orientation. Once again, I want to say that I'm not bitter or blaming anybody that about my experience. If somebody asks what do I feel that I gained from it, that was a strength. I think that there is a certain amount of stability and confidence that I gained in my education in elementary school. I think the ability to stand in front of a group like this goes back to those roots when we were in operettas and we did perform and we stood in front of the community. So I think that there are sides of it that were positive, and I don't think I'd really like to trade it. But mostly because of the aspect of coming back and seeing that the Lord has touched the valley. I think that's the beautiful part for me personally. And I think that's a significant part. And the ministry that's here is something that's going to be dear to me. Thank you very much. You've been a good audience.